We're back. The Neil Haley Show and the Total Celebrity segment. I'm excited to welcome the program from the Real Housewives of Atlanta, Portia Williams. Portia, thanks for calling. How are you doing? And I know you're excited about Tuesday night, aren't you? Love Connection, right?
Yes, I am doing well. Thank you for asking. And yes, I am definitely excited for everybody to see what Andy and I are up to on the 19th tomorrow night. It's going to be crazy.
Well, you think about the Love Connection. You think about the old Love Connection. Portia, that shows my age at 45, remembering that days. How about you? Do you have any memories of the old Love Connection before Andy?
Oh, my God, yes. I used to watch Love Connection all the time. I lived for the moments where they would really talk about the date that they had gone on, and the woman sees it one way and the man sees it another way, and you just never know who they're going to pick at the very end. It was just always a roller coaster of watching that show.
And you always remember when the commercial came, be back in 2 and 2, right? Am I right? That was always what he would say for Love Connection, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. Right? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
No, I said we'll be back in 2 and 2. They would always say on the Love Connection at the commercial break. Right? Remember that? You don't?
Yes, yes. And you have to see, like for me being on the show, it was just as nerve-wracking as it is when you're watching it. I think for the audience, it's like, oh, my God, you know, who's she going to choose? You know this guy's eliminated. You know you've got 2 guys left. And for me sitting on that couch, the decision seemed like life or death.
All right. So tell us specifically. So you are part of this, and how are you part of this? Explain that whole thing. So you were on the show. So you had to get worried about stuff. So tell me how you and Andy are connecting on the show Tuesday.
Well, on the show, Andy is finding me love. So I'm the one who gets to go on a date with the 3 guys. And Andy really handpicked these gentlemen. I would have to say he did a really good job. Each guy was very cool in his own right. Of course, one of them stood out more than the other. But I really took this process seriously. And I could tell through going through it that Andy did as well. And we had a whole lot of fun in the process.
Absolutely, Portia. And let's kind of go into specifically enough the process of the 3 guys without spoiling Tuesday night, because I'm sure Andy knows you so well, Portia, and say who's going to be the perfect types, but also ones that are going to make it really interesting, the dates, right?
Right. You know, Andy knows, and he pretty much, I think, over the years has seen a trend and maybe the type of guy that I've dated. And I think he definitely put one in there to see if I was going to step out of my comfort zone and kind of catch me. Because if you want to have a different result, you got to try something different. And, you know, I appreciate the variety.
And we're talking to Portia Williams of The Real Housewives Atlanta here on The Neil Haley Show, talking about Love Connection with Andy Cohen Tuesday night. We're going to find out the dates for Portia. Now, Portia, here's the funny part. Dating now compared to dating back in the day. So how much different is it, especially without spoiling? I don't want to spoil your dates, so everyone needs to tune in. But tell me specifically enough about how dating is different now than, let's say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, et cetera, et cetera. Of a dating?
Well, you know, for me in particular, it would be like, 10 years ago. And back in the day, it was really, you know, if the guy was fun, you know, if he is a great spot to go to in Atlanta, you know, kind of simple things. But now I'm older, I definitely want someone who has business about themselves. So I'm interested in maybe homebodies as opposed to somebody who likes to just be out. You know, and I want somebody who is dating with a purpose, like not just out here just dating the date. Somebody who is dating to actually settle down, because that's what I want to do. So my whole mind frame is different going into it now.
You want no drama, Portia. You want a homebody that's understanding your career, understanding how important everything is, and that you're going to be a breadwinner in a certain way as well. Not, okay, I'm just here as the wife, right, or the girlfriend. You want somebody that's
going to
treat you as an equal in so many ways. I'm not going to talk about other relationships, even though I'd love to ask that question. You know why. But I'm being cordial in this interview, Portia, just to promote what you're doing. But ultimately, you're looking for a guy that's going to respect you, respect your career, and understand that you are an equal in so many ways in those dates, for sure.
I mean, absolutely. You know, and as far as the drama, I definitely don't want drama. But, you know, there are other ways to keep the spice in a relationship besides having to be so imbalanced. And, you know, as long as there's that mutual respect, I think I want a partner. I want somebody, we could be a power couple. You can have what you have, I can have what I have, and then we can grow together. Like, that is the turn on for me, is us being able to grow together and, you know, be on the same level.
So, again, we're talking to Portia Williams of The Real Housewives of Atlanta here on The Neil Haley Show. What would you say, Portia, do you want somebody that is known, very well known in the community? I mean, like a celebrity, or are you looking for somebody, homebody, that really you're the star in certain ways and you're the one that the paparazzi is going to look at? Do you see yourself wanting somebody that is going to have that same high profile as yourself if you're looking? I know on the show it wasn't like that, but I'm talking of our love life.
You know, if I were to date somebody who was in the spotlight, they would have to be similar to me, because I, you know, even though I am in the spotlight, any of my friends will tell you, I am one to be out when I have to and in majority of the time. You know, I love house parties. I love cooking at home for my family. I love doing all that, you know, just kind of down-to-earth type of stuff. So if it was like a cool celebrity or somebody like that, I would. But really, I'm looking for the regular guy, you know, someone who's ready to start a family, and someone who has priorities together, that, you know, and putting me and our future family, if we were to have one first. That's really what's important to me.
You don't want ego. Ego is something that you don't want in this, in a relationship. You want it to be a partnership.
You know, ego.
Yes, ego.
I don't want ego. I want confidence. I think it's a big difference. I don't want you to have a big ego that can easily be bruised, and then, you know, now you're feeling some type of way, and now you're getting insecure about little things. I want somebody who's confident, though, to stand next to me, and let's move around and do what we do, and he still feels good about himself, as well as, you know, raising me up.
Absolutely, Portia. And so give us the perfect guy in 30 seconds. What are you looking for? You talked about a homebody. You're talking about somebody that's confident but not cocky and arrogant. You're looking for somebody that's a partnership. Anything else? Let's talk about looks. What are you looking for? An athletic guy? What kind of looks are you looking for, Portia?
Oh, my goodness. In the looks department, I would just have to say they need to be attractive to me. I've been known to date guys that may not be attractive to other people, but just attractive to me. And really what's attractive to me is if we have good chemistry. So somebody who is deeming themselves. I don't like people who are kind of pretending just to, like,
right,
get to know me, or pretending to, you know, agree with everything I say. Like, that stuff irritates me. Just be you. Be honest. Be transparent. And be God-fearing, and that's pretty much it.
All right, tune in Tuesday night to Love Connection with Andy Cohen, as Portia will be one of the people dating some really cool guys. And best place we connect with you have social media, stuff like that. Portia, we can follow you and stuff. Where can we go?
Oh, Portia For Real on all social media.
All right, Portia, great talking to you. Thanks for calling, and best of luck, and maybe you'll make that love connection, okay, Portia? All right,
take care. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Total Celebrity segment, Surreal segment, live from Miami. Not me, but my co-host, Sarah Bella. Sarah, how are you? And I talked about, again, Miami and the just interesting thing, but you are learning very early in the radio game. You just can perform anywhere, anytime. It's all about the story, and it's all about having fun conversations. So, Sarah, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very excited, of course, to be here again from Miami. But yeah, it's great to be able to tune in, chime in from anywhere. And I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Lee Shapiro, former music director. Welcome, Mr. Shapiro. How are you, and how's your evening? Where are you calling from?
I am calling from New Jersey, where all of the Jersey Boys came from. Frankie was always a recruiter from our state.
Oh, really? Wow.
Right.
Yeah. So interestingly, let's kind of like to jump really quickly into, you know, specifically how you got involved in music.
How I got involved in music, honestly, was a calling. I saw it when I was eight. I saw a 12-year-old cousin play the piano and get all kinds of response from the family. And from there on, I was hooked, and I've never done anything else for 50 years, 60 years, whatever it is. It's great.
Awesome. And, you know, what do you look for in finding new talent?
Well, honestly, I'll tell you the truth. The talent that we have, I'm not really what we are as the Hitmen is we are a collection of guys who all were with major artists in the 70s. I was one of the Four Seasons. Our guitarist, Jimmy Ryan, was with Carly Simon for 20 years. We have people in the band who have performed with Elton John and the Rascals and just on and on and on. And so we make our song list from those relationships. And as a result, we present to pretty much the baby boomers and a little bit younger, the music the way they remember it, performed live with no gimmickry or electronic additives. And it ends up being a real travel back in time.
And Lee, that's very interesting when you talk about that. You said you guys all were in with major groups, as you talked about, and you came all together. What do you think? What was the reasoning? Was there a connection that got you all together, especially when being part of all those groups?
Sure, absolutely. Well, what happened at first was and we've been doing this for about 8 or 9 years, and which is amazing in itself, because a lot of us didn't perform for 30 years. We were doing production and arranging and things like that. But at the height of Jersey Boys, I've maintained my friendship with Frankie Valli, having been one of the Four Seasons for 45 years. And about 9 years ago, I was in the studio and he was there and I was visiting. And I told him I was thinking of doing this. And he was very supportive, said, like, go ahead, man. You were one of the Four Seasons. You can do whatever you want. Because a lot of the other sound-alike and tribute groups are limited as to what they're allowed to do of the hits from that era. But our guys, myself included, are all authentic members of groups and writers and performers, recording artists. So one thing led to another, and I ended up getting people from my past and sounding them. I knew Jimmy Ryan from the jingle industry. I knew Russ Velasquez also from the jingle industry. And, you know, hey, guys, you want to try going on the road? It's been a long time. And we went out and tried it, and an agent saw us. And we do 50 dates a year or so, and we've been doing it our 8th year.
Wow.
Very cool. And, you know, you mentioned that you worked with, you know, Paul McCartney, Elton John. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Jimmy Ryan is really the one with the most extensive studio experience. And he was doing was doing a session for Carly Simon because he was her musical director for a couple of decades. And they were doing background vocals. And in walks Paul McCartney from another studio and says, hey, do you need any help with the background vocals? You know, what are you going to say? No, Paul, we're good. No, so of course he came in. And matter of fact, when we do music that reflects Carly Simon, we show video during our show depicting everyone's relationship with the artists that we're performing.
So that's really interesting. So let's kind of talk about your most amazing story when you were with the Four Seasons. Do you have like a story, Lee, that like, you know, that's amazing?
I have too many stories for you. I have a
billion. Yeah, not enough time, a 15-minute interview, but just kind of give us one of those nice stories that people are going to be back.
I'm going to give you the first story. I'm auditioning to be one of the Four Seasons and replace Bob Gaudio. I'm 19 years old. And I go to a rehearsal, and I'm sitting at the keyboard, and in walks Frankie. And keep in mind that, you know, this is 1973. Throughout the 60s, these guys sold billions of records, and here I am being considered to replace the writer and producer of those records. And Frankie walks in and says, here, play this. And he puts the song Dawn down in front of me, and I hit a chord, and he goes, pretty as a midsummer morn. And I stopped, and he said, what's the matter? I said, man, you sound just like the radio. And everybody cracked up at my expense. But the long and short of it is they took me on and I stayed with them for a decade. So it was a very intimidating and yet exciting moment.
Wow. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And, Yeah, I'm super curious to know, because you maybe have the music on vinyl and 8-track, cassette. You know, you mentioned you've gone through everything, CDs and so on. How do you feel about the most recent thing, the Spotify, virtual music kind of on the go? How do you feel about that, and how is it affecting music today?
First of all, unfortunately, my dear, you've got such a hum on this line that all I heard was, how does that affect music today?
Yeah. So, Lee, I'll explain the question. Basically, she's talking about all the ways music's changed, all the ways we stream it now, Spotify, all that stuff. Sure, what do you think of that? Yeah.
Well, here it is in a nutshell, in my opinion. And frankly, I've worked with Barry Manilow extensively, and he feels the same way. And that is, it's a different art today. Songwriting of yesteryear and recording and all of that stuff, the priorities were different. Back then, it was all about the lead vocal performance and the melody in the song. That's really what, if you could do that, that's why so many of the songs from the past, you can sing them by yourself and it evokes, the emotion of the songs. Today, I would have to say that the music is much more production-driven. In other words, it's not necessarily about evolving a beautiful melody as it is the actual sonic quality and the mix of the drums and the cleverness of the mutes in and out. And so it's really not geared to me. And I have a great respect for what whether it be electronic dance music or hip hop or any of the genres that are so popular today. I have a lot of respect for it, but I also have to say that it's different. It's not better or worse. It's just a different way to communicate your art. It's kind of the difference between doing a painting and making a collage. One is starting from scratch and forming your images, and the other one, like a collage, is more like ripping off things that exist and putting them together and building your statement out of that. Both valid, just I have to tell you that I prefer the old way.
and I'm sure you do, Lee. I think artists don't like, again, the ability not to share as much money. And now the days when albums, you made money on albums, now you have to make money on tours, the big ones. The money comes with the tour.
Well, the fact that you're so well-versed, it's actually, I'm impressed that you're so well-versed in that aspect of it. Because, yes, when I was with Frankie Valli, we toured to support the record sales. And today, with downloads and sharing and all that stuff, now you make the recordings to support your tour, because that's the real crux of income, comes from actual live performance. And if you're not touring, you're not really in it anymore, whereas there used to be groups that were just recording and never toured, but that you won't find that now.
Absolutely. And Sarah, I'm going to throw a millennial question out to you. How many of these artists do you know of their music when he brings up certain people like the Four Seasons and things like that? Are you familiar with that music at all, Sarah?
It might be beyond my time personally, as far as what a mainstream millennial person would know. I'm not going to lie. If I brought it up, most people, the majority, would probably go right over their head. But not to say we can't admire, music that was foundation to music today.
So I have a question, Lee. This will be interesting. 50s, 60s, what would you say you're familiar with if you're going, let's go from the 80s on in music? What era do you like better, 70s, 80s, 60s, 50s music?
Well, 70s is where I show up.
Yeah,
I mean,
for
70s
sure.
is my era.
Yeah, definitely.
So I love that. But honestly, a lot of the stuff that happened in the 80s was trendy, and that's really the real introduction of electronic recording and drum machines and stuff like that. And then it kind of came back into the live world in the 90s. And I kind of like that. I like people playing. I certainly have a respect and an admiration for the amazing programming that goes on today. But I also like the organic, the human aspect of it. One of my favorites was Amy Winehouse, let it make she rest in peace. And the things that draw from the past but make it their own today. That's really what I admire the most.
Sarah, what kind of music, I was asking Sarah on this question, what kind of music would you say you like, Sarah? And then ask another question to Lee, if you're not talking about today's music.
Well, if I had to choose between, 60s, 70s, and 80s and what people my age would probably know is probably 80s, like things like Eye of the Tiger is huge, like Celine Dion. So definitely 80s. on like certain hit songs that can be super popular.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because you're naming ones of people who basically record the traditional way. The Police also, and Cheap Trick. You know, all these guys were bands, which I love. I'm not a big fan of the studio group, although it has merit, but it seems a little premeditated to me. It doesn't have the spontaneity that I like to listen to.
Well, I love the 80s, Lee. More than anything, the 80s are my favorite. I'm 45 years old, but the 80s are my favorite time. But I'm into different music all the time. I look at it's kind of cracks me up. You talk about people touring. Warren G, which is a rap artist, I think, from the 90s, literally, he is in Pittsburgh performing at this small place down in outside, not even in the city of Pittsburgh. So you see a lot of these performers still performing, and live is the big thing that's happening more and more these days, and to see performers continue to perform for many years to come, and where it used to, hey, you made the money and then you were done. What do you think the reason is for that, Lee, too? Yeah.
Well, honestly, you know, I really think that the age thing has faded into the distance, and the people who had that originally was country music. It didn't matter how old you were with country music. Well, now rock and roll has been around so long, and pop music, the stuff that we grew up with, that people want to relive their childhood, and it's not, oh goody, I'm going to go hear oldies. It's basically they're going to relive their past, and that's honestly is why there are so many tribute bands. But it's also why a guy like Sting, who is in his 60s, is so popular still. And people who remember the original Police records, they'll still go to a concert with their kids, with their grandkids, and it seems to have become. Like, our parents had the big band era, and our parents had Sinatra, and our parents had Count Basie and all that. Well, rock music, 70s, 80s, whatever, that's our standards now at our age. It's, you know, when you think that the 90s is 20-plus years ago, it's become our standards. It's the thing that people want to hear at a function, at an event. They want to relive their own childhood.
So true, and it's going to make music live on forever. For sure, Sarah, that now we're going to see certain genres continue, and those people that are into that age music continue to follow it and be into it just because of Sirius Satellite, XM, and all these other places that are living on a specific generation of music, Sarah.
Exactly. And I think definitely.
Okay, Sarah, another question for Lee before we're running out of time. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, well, I think music definitely, repeats itself. You know, are there any songs today that you feel maybe represent an 80s vibe or a 60s or 70s vibe? Is there any maybe music?
Yeah. First of all, I don't think you could listen to Bruno Mars and not hear in Bruno Mars Michael Jackson,
yes.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's there. And I respect that, and I'm thrilled that he calls on that stuff, because it keeps it alive and shows you the assets, the absolute quality of the original records as interpreted by a younger man who absolutely kills it. I mean, he's just phenomenal. So I have to say that what really tickles me is to hear influences of music from the 70s, 80s, and 90s in today's productions, and the reason is because it's good.
Very good. It's very good music. And so Lee, again, tell us about the Hitmen and where you guys are touring, so people can go and check you out and stuff. What's going on there with your tour and
well, first of all, we're all over the place all the time. We do a lot of Florida, we do a lot of East Coast and Midwest, but we have a Facebook page, which is The Hitmen Live, facebook.com/TheHitmenLive, must say live. And there's an events button. So you hit events and our whole calendar comes up. And we're very, very blessed. About 4 years ago, we had 1,400 likes on Facebook. And now 4 years later, we have 16,000. And it's become exponential. I mean, we have one fan that's seen us 65 times. I don't think I've seen us 65 times. It's quite unbelievable. And we have people coming to the meet and greet to have us sign CDs or whatever with a tear in their eye holding an LP from 1978. I saw you at the, you know, wherever, Madison Square Garden with Frankie, or I saw you at Tanglewood with Carly. And it actually dawns on you at the age that we all are, this stuff actually mattered. It wasn't just our own ego trip of, look, that's me and I get a solo and I'm on TV. It actually had an influence and had an impact on people's lives. And I'm honored to have been a part of everybody's life like that.
It seems like it.
Oh, absolutely.
And Sarah, it's always a great education to hear great artists that have worked with such amazing people leave. When are you guys going to write a book? Sarah's waiting for that, right? Is that ever going to come, Liam?
Yeah. Bring it out. Everyone loves books.
Yeah, no, we'd love to do it. And collectively, we've been on 85 albums. So the artists that we can talk about, you know, with first-hand, person-to-person recollection is so extensive. I mean, it's everything from the Village People to Elton John and everything in between us all. Our drummer, Steve, well, we had a really neat thing happen in Florida about 3 months ago. We play a song by Foreigner because Steve worked with the members of Foreigner, as did our keyboard player, Russ. And we got a phone call, and Dennis Elliott, the original drummer of Foreigner, was in the audience and came up and played I Want to Know What Love Is with us. So not only do we play the music of the classic rock megastars, but now we can say one of them plays ours. They came in and sat, and it was a thrill. The guy was great. And so, you know, stuff like that is what really makes it special.
And I'm sure Sarah also likes to see music live, right? That's the best way to see music, right, Sarah?
I mean, I think so, especially music that sounds so much better live. You know, music that really it resonates with you in person, and you get the, you know, the energy of the crowd and the fans.
You know, it's just like anything else. There's the only thing that's really been lost for me in today's technological world is the, you know, organic person-to-person thing. And just like in business sometimes now, I mean, you can do business with somebody for 10 years and never meet them. And you can have meetings over Skype or whatever, or just through texting or what. And it's great. You can get a lot accomplished really fast. But one thing you don't get is to see the person's expression on their face as to whether they like the song or whether you can tell that you've won them over with a lyric. It's kind of not as tangible as it used to be. So that, you know, I can't say I miss it because we do it. But when people come to see us, like you were saying, the live aspect of it is in the foreground. We connect with the audience. We don't perform at the audience. We bring them into the experience, and everybody goes back in time.
All right, Lee, best place we can find information on you, learn about your tours, every different thing. Where's the best place we can go? You said your Facebook page is blowing up, but where are other places? Facebook, your website?
Well, I would also, Facebook is good, and the website really tells the story. We always encourage Facebook because when people go there, then they can click like. And I always say in our shows, we want you to like us. We like you, so why don't you like us? But the website is www.thehitmenlive.com, and I appreciate you asking for that. And the other is facebook.com/thehitmenlive. And go there and like us. We like you.
All right, Lee.
Exactly.
We'll do that for you, sure, Lee. Thanks for calling, and thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, I appreciate your time and continued success. Thanks
Take
so
care.
Much, both of you.
Appreciate it. Take care,
Lee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You listen to Neil Haley's show. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Author's Corner segment, and I'm excited to welcome the program Kristen Lawless. She is the author of Formerly Known as Food. Kristen, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay, so let's kind of just jump into your background. Then we're going to go to this topic because it's very, very interesting in the way we have, you know, decide what we eat and what we decide to eat, especially when you talk about organic. But tell us your background first, Kristen.
I'm a nutrition educator, so I've worked with doctors in New York City and in Los Angeles, and I help people understand what they're eating. And then I'm also a journalist, and I've been working in this field, researching health and nutrition for about a decade and writing about it for places like the New York Times, the Atlantic, and I've just finished my first book.
And that's the exciting thing, Kristen, but tell us specifically enough, why did you write this book?
I read the book because I, you know, after working with so many people over the years and realizing that everyone, literally everyone, doesn't matter your background or anything, is very confused about health and nutrition and about the foods they should and shouldn't be eating. And they often ask me for a book to recommend, and there wasn't one book I could say, oh, this explains what, you know, everything that's wrong with our food supply, what it's doing to your health, and what we should do about it as individuals and as a society. And so I set out to write that book, and I spent, you know, I spent 10 years researching it and 5 years really in the nitty-gritty and writing it.
Wow, okay. And so what have you discovered that's going to surprise us? I saw a little bit about it in your one sheet talking, you know, specifically enough about organic foods. This is something that's the big thing, Kristen. Everyone thinks, you know, as long as we eat organic, we're going to be fine. We can go ahead and, you know, spend our time going to Whole Foods and different places like that and having a large grocery bill. Is that the right thing to do when it comes to nutrition and everything?
It's very tricky and confusing, and that's part of the problem. What I explain in detail in the book is that the food industry and the agricultural industries in many ways have co-opted the term organic, and they end up putting it on products that are highly processed. So if you go into a grocery store, see, and I give some examples in the book, you'll see them on the shelves, and they're full of additives and all kinds of environmental chemicals, really, that shouldn't be in our food, but yet they can still say organic on the front. And so it's confusing to consumers because that word makes you think that it's okay. So unfortunately, you know, this is the situation we're in now, and people have to be very critical and skeptical when looking at these things.
So we basically can't trust the FDA, it sounds like, Kristen, what you're saying, and that we really have to be looking at the labels ourselves and kind of judging from ourselves, reading what's in it.
Yeah, you have to really educate yourself. And you mentioned the FDA and also the EPA. These are the two agencies that are supposed to be protecting the food supply. Particularly with the FDA, it's concerning because they're not really carefully regulating all the chemicals in the food. And I explain why in the book, and it's an entire chapter, so I encourage people to read it, because once you read it, you'll understand what you need to be looking out for and why we can't trust this. We have this concept that if it's on a shelf in a package, it's safe. Somebody tested it somewhere. It's not going to harm me or my kids. In fact, it's not true.
Yeah, and so it will. Now, what is your recommendation from writing the book that we should really watch what we're eating, how important it is for our health and our life if we cut out processed foods, we look at really eating lots of healthy foods and really watch out when we're at the grocery store and really be prepared and look at what could tempt us that's not going to be great for our health?
Well, food is everything. I mean, what you put in your body, it's common sense, is going to be the foundation for your health or ill health. There's no question. There's plenty of research and science to back that up. I think we've become disconnected from food in so many ways that we don't realize the fundamental effect it's having on our bodies. And so I look at things like, you know, I mentioned the gut health and brain health and all this other,
right,
these aspects of our body that are deeply disturbed by the food we put into them.
All right, give us some quick recommendations, especially as an expert and a journalist, of what we should do when we are in the grocery aisle to shop for foods and make sure that we have the right diet for ourselves. Yeah.
The number one thing is, in the book, I have my ideas called the whole egg theory, and that's the number one thing is you just eat whole foods. So if there's a bunch of ingredients that you don't know what they are, that's right, not a whole food. The whole egg theory, so you look at a whole egg. That's a whole perfect food. It comes from nature. You can't really mess it up. It's good for you in so many ways. It's one of the best foods for you, I think. Use that as your guiding principle and apply that to all other foods. So other whole foods are like, you know, you roast a chicken, you make some broccoli, you have a steak, you have some grilled fish, you have a tomato, you have an avocado. These are whole foods. That's what you should be eating.
Should it always be organic, Kristen?
I think it's best, the reason that organic's important, especially for produce and for some other foods, is that you're reducing your consumption of pesticides and herbicides and fungicides. These are chemicals that are put on the food to kill off weeds and pests and have other problems in the field, but they have an adverse effect on our bodies, and unfortunately, the industry would like us to believe it's not true and that they're safe. But when you look and you'll see in my book, there's plenty of research to suggest that these are not safe and, in fact, are causing things like cancers, diabetes, Alzheimer's, on and on.
All right. Well, that's very, very interesting. Now, if we kind of stick to the whole foods, but times in our pocketbooks, we can't afford organic, it's best to go whole and not processed, it sounds like to me, right? If you're going to look at, because an ideal world would be we all could eat organic, right, Kristen, all the time. But that's really not the case. So the best thing is go whole first before anything, correct?
Right, right, correct.
All right. Well, fantastic. Where's the best place we can find information on you and purchase your book and learn more about you? I think this is very, very helpful for consumers and people out there to understand what's going on and to also check the labels. Even if they can't trust the word organics on there, they better read what's the ingredients before purchasing it. Well, where's the best place we can find info?
You can go to my website. It's Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-I-N, Lawless, L-A-W-L-E-S-S.com. I have lots of info on there. I have some excerpts from the book. I have recipes and ideas for meals, too. And I'm on Twitter at Kristen Lawless. I'm also on Facebook. And you can buy my book on Amazon, IndieBound, anywhere books are sold.
Well, fabulous. Really and great job with the book. It's really timely and it's important, especially with our healthcare situation that we're about to go through in this process. The more healthy we eat, the less we're going to be sick and the more we're going to be productive in society, and the weight loss and obesity epidemic will disappear if we do the right things. So I appreciate you calling, and it's very important to look at those things.
It is. Prevention is key, and the number one way to keep yourself healthy in a preventative measure is to eat real whole foods.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Kristen, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks.
All right. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Author's Corner segment / business segment, and I had Dr. Philip on my show, and he really showed the doctor in him on the Total Education Hour, talking about the sabotaging trait and really involving kids. Well, now he's going to be my doctor, my personal doctor. I guess that's what happens when you have your own radio show. That's a plug for people to consider your own radio show, because you're going to learn so much. So I'm excited to welcome the program, Dr. Philip Agrios. Dr. Philip, thanks for calling. And this is the key thing when you get to learn every day, like I get to learn from so many amazing people. And when you're willing to learn, you're going to grow your business, you're going to grow your life, you're going to grow and transform the whole being of you. Don't you agree?
Oh, definitely. You have to be open to anything, and because things continually change every day.
Continually change. Okay, so now I'm going to put on, I'm not an entrepreneur by trade, and you're going to coach me about sabotaging trait, and I'm going to tell you some secrets of what I've done in my journey as an entrepreneur, starting from just a tutor, and go through that and tell you some of the pitfalls in this 15 to 20 minute interview. Are you interested in this? So you're basically going to be the doctor listening to me and showing your expertise when it comes to the sabotaging trait and why I continue to finally find myself as an entrepreneur. And it's a journey. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Phillips, it's a journey as an entrepreneur?
It's a journey in anything, and that's one of the things people don't understand is the journey never ends. They're just minimal, mini journeys from the end that end, but it's a continuation of just one full journey.
All right, so here's the story in a nutshell. My listeners know this. I was a former professional wrestler. I met my wife. I was wrestling in Bremen, Germany on a tour for 12 days, and I sat down and somehow, God spoke to me and told me, you need to be with, you're soon going to be married. You need to get out of this profession. So I flat out quit, went back to school to get my master's degree in elementary education, and became a school teacher, taught for 7 or 8 years. And in that process, met somebody who was one of my tutors, because I started a tutoring business by being just the tutor and started building a clientele base of 20 to 30, Dr. Philip. And then I hired tutors. And that was an interesting situation, interviewing people and then having to manage them, Dr. Philip. And when you're not trained in anything in business management and you're not making that much per tutor, it becomes a big headache and takes up a lot of your time.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, because one of the things that people don't do, which you've done, is they made a decision and said, you know what, I need to move on. I need to disconnect from where I'm at this moment because it's no longer working me. This no longer serves me. And you had the foresight to say, I'm going to have enough trust within myself and my higher power to move forward, and this is where my next step is. And unfortunately, a lot of people, because of an illusionary fear, and that's what fear is, just
yes.
an illusionary fear, that they can't move forward, and I commend you on that.
Okay, so again, thank you. And that moving forward, well, I did that, and then basically my school closed. And in that process, I was building my tutoring company. I landed one of my tutors, said, hey, you want to do a college radio show on WRCT 88.3? And I'm like, yeah, you could be like a podcast for you. So that's how I got back into radio after my days in pro wrestling. And then I hired a syndicator, got me on one station. That's it in 2 or 3 months. And then I went through LinkedIn and built it to where I built it today through networking. I didn't need to have a syndicator. And I ended up, people came to me, saw my show was really good. And I expanded my show first to Blog Talk Radio, then 5 days a week. And I was one of the only guys out there in independent radio doing 5 days a week of shows. And I was building my business. Well, in that process of tutoring, once I quit my teaching job, I had to take on more of my tutors, and more of my tutors I couldn't manage. I had to take them on myself, Dr. Philip. So I went back to this small business owner doing it all myself and working for somebody booking radio shows. So that's where I came into to the PR game and learned and developed. And one of the other things in business we have to understand is trends. And understanding trends and evaluating trends and seeing how far you can scale something. Isn't that true, Dr. Philip?
Oh, definitely. You have to know where it's going because you can want to go one direction, but if the trend's in the other direction, do you have enough power to create a new trend? That's the question.
So how about, Dr. Philip, in the process when you talk about how many times does life get away in a small business where you have to make decisions that really aren't the best for your business just to survive, to take care of your family? That happens, doesn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt. And that's where people need to understand is, are you in a survival mode or are you in a growth mode? Survival is just protection. There's only two things that we do. We protect or grow. That's it. And when you're in that survival fear mode, that's where you're now bringing things to reinforce that fear. But if you go into, and we're not talking about, you know, hey, let me just do this. We're talking about calculated risk that you took some time to really think about and maybe got experts in to say, hey, what do I do? Can I do this? Especially if you don't know what to do. But the more knowledge that you have and then implementing that knowledge allows you to go forward and start to slowly disconnect. So there's a lot of people that I've worked with where they wanted to do another business, but they had to have their job. And I said, we're not quitting the job. What we're going to do is we're going to make sure you're going to get rid of stuff like TV and other things that don't
yes.
do anything for you. And we're going to focus on that new business, but you're still going to have your own job. And then once we have that critical step is, when do I leave the job to go fully into my business? And so it's a process. So it's not an overnight thing. It's a lot of work with it. But you have to be staying focused and committed, and which some people are not, unfortunately.
And see, Dr. Philip, what happened to me is on circumstance it happened. So I had to go work for a company called Special Guest. This is a great story for myself, but I think this helps you as a doctor to kind of diagnose where I'm at and where my problem is and where I need to move forward. And he's worth a lot. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen. That's why I had a great conversation with him off air. And I thought, hey, you see how I come up with branding ideas? Well, I'm willing to have someone evaluate me. I'm not this kind of person. We all need business coaches. And I really believe that truly in my heart and soul. And if we don't have business coaches, we really run into big problems. And we have to surround ourselves with people that are even bigger than us and develop in that process. And I learned that. So I was basically booking radio shows for a company called Special Guests. They were conservative talk radio. And we would call different radio stations. And I had relationships with podcast people. And they had a clientele base of maybe 15, 20 people, Dr. Philip. And they gave us their press release. And we would literally pitch them to radio shows, either make phone calls, which I didn't like, because again, you know, I'm running a tutoring business still. So how am I going to have time to do that and try to grow other clients? And literally then email people. Well, I create relationships with other podcasts or radio shows, Dr. Philip, and I book my guests on that. And I created a relationship. And how important is networking when you're in that semi-growth phase, survival phase? How important is networking, Dr. Phillip?
It's actually one of the key six steps of the blueprint that I discovered. And what you're doing, see, a lot of people say, well, how come now I have to do this shift, which you just told me. But because of that little uncomfortable feeling, you're able to now force yourself to go into more communicating and networking. Maybe if you never had that thing that happened to you that shifted you. So people have to realize things come into our lives to say, you know, I really want this here, but I'm not willing to do this. So sometimes the universe comes in to force us into that mode, and that's what you did. So it's very important to get networking, but not just coming out and go, hi, how you doing? You have to have passion.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Step five. You have to have passion first, but you have to have a plan of what you're going to see. That's step four. So when you have and you're networking, you need to make sure that how can I be of value to that person? This is not about me. That's giving.
Exactly.
You have to focus on what it is and what can I be of value to this person. And then when you can become a value of that person, then you can start creating a rapport because it's not a one-sided discussion.
So in this process, right when I quit, you wouldn't believe it. Like I kept myself scheduled, Dr. Phillip. It was pretty impressive. And was talking to a lot of people I met on the radio show, and we talked and we created networking groups. But what I missed in the process and did some barters when I was trying to build at first, and when I was still doing tons of tutoring all night, doing my radio show 11 o'clock at night every night, except when I was at RCT on Fridays, I was doing it every night, interviewing oodles and oodles of people. But it was more about, hey, I was trying to provide, hey, I'm the only radio show 7 days a week. I was doing it seven nights a week. This is before I grew my business. So I was doing that. And this is years ago. Trust me. I'm telling you this story just to show you the process. I was managing tutors and I was now booking guests on radio shows. Well, when the shift changed a little bit is when somebody hired me full time to work for him, to book him on radio shows, but increase his overall band, look at social media, look at all the overall digital picture of him and help grow his brand. In that process, I learned so many different things. But then I was in a different focus. It was a job focus, Dr. Phillip. So I was doing tutoring and I was involved in one of his other businesses, Visalis, and was doing that, but I was missing my opportunity to grow my brand. I was back to a worker. And that's when I would have had a coach like you saying, Neil, what happened to that passion before finding a paycheck, right?
Right. And that's a sabotaging trait. That's the thing I discovered is that your sabotaging trait, if you knew back then what that was, you might have never made that shift to be to go with him and focus on something else because you went into a fear mode or a concern mode. You know, people think fear, they go to the extreme. But you were concerned or you wanted to be more safe and
safe.
You didn't feel that you were able to shift it. So, yeah, the sabotaging trait and the antidote, once you understand your antidote, when all the things are going well in your life, you're using your antidote. When things are being resistive and you're getting all stressed out, your sabotaging trait is there to show you that there's an imbalance. And people think that sabotage is undermining and how it's going to destroy
yes.
my life. It's not. The sabotaging trait is essential. We cannot exist without it. This is what I discovered. And once you understand that the sabotaging trait is there to slow you down and create inefficiencies in your life in order for you to grow and evolve or dissolve through fear, and it's your choice. And once you understand that this is who you are, the sabotaging trait is there to evolve you. That's how we evolve. And the antidote helps to balance that out so that you can focus on and doing what you're here to do.
Okay, so Dr. Phillip, from that process came, but I also think that this sabotaging, I don't know, maybe I made a good decision because I decided in my mind that I'm going to use it as an education. I'm going to learn everything about this stuff. And I saw the celebrity interview, which he was allowing me to provide for me, the biggest way to grow my brand and make me look big in tutoring and social media. I had only a few celebrities on before, but I was such a celebrity huge thing. We did celebrity segments, it was the G.J. Reynolds, I forget, Simply G celebrity segment. And we got syndicated on other terrestrial radio stations that he helped sponsor. So I was learning all that process. And then I was at a point of a shift again where I could either decide, am I going to go into network marketing on a full-time basis and make a full-time income, which I didn't like? Or was I going to continue to grow my brand with the celebrity interview? And guess what I did? I did the celebrity interview, which at one point, GJ and I had to go separate ways because he was ready to focus more on his network marketing business instead of his brand. And so I had to go. But I made another decision through the best thing that I enjoyed and I loved, which is celebrity interviews. And I wanted to continue even though it was not the priority of the company I was working for. I was doing all the other stuff for them, but I said, I'm going to continue this celebrity stuff because this is fun. I enjoy this. I'm going to keep doing this.
That's key. And that's what people don't do, is focusing on what's fun for them. But it's not what I want, it's what I desire. And that's where they have that shift. But you are the person who you are now from all the challenges you've gone through and the shifts, even though you thought at that moment that was a bad decision or a good decision. It was still a decision of neutrality, that this is where you needed to be. You needed that particular knowledge, that situation, to become who you are now. And that's why no one should have any regrets at all in their past, because it was a build-up to who you are today. Not who you were, but where you are now and the expertise and all the things of how what great things you do for your clients is all from all the challenges you've ever came through, and that you allow that to be a benefit to you and not a detriment.
So in that process, after the process, finally, again, he let me go. And I was in a flight mode or a desperation mode, which was a pretty challenging thing. So I did what I know best, right, Dr. Philip? Tutored a ton. But I went and met influencers because again, my celebrity show, ran into a former Super Bowl champion that was trying to build his Twitter account and different things and come on my radio show. And in return, we bartered because I had no reputation in running social media management marketing. And we bartered together and he would give me tutoring clients. And I built my tutoring clientele again, but every day, Monday through Saturday, late nights. And it brought income, but again, I was not on my major focus. And in that process, I started to grow a social media business, I guess a branding and social media marketing business, not digital marketing, more the process of Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn, and coaching people on their brand and social media. And because that's what I was doing for GJ. And I had somebody who came in and was referring me people for a sales deal where, hey, they get them on my radio show, come back, relationship starts, and there you go. So I was developing that and doing that, but had somebody else doing it. So we grew the business, developed things. I completely transformed myself and educated myself more and made the shift away from tutoring to this business where I saw, holy cow, business pays more than education. And I could be doing things and still be doing my celebrity interviews. So in that process, my celebrity interviews continued to grow. My brand continued to grow. My reach continued to grow, social media and marketing-wise. And I was coaching people, doing social media for them, social media marketing. But I was about to go through another shift, Dr. Philip. This is, again, the thing. I continue to evaluate my business and my business. I still tutor people because I enjoy it, but I don't do it as a primary income. It's not my big focus. My focus is building my brand, and for my brand, opportunity comes.
Exactly. And again, you are being aware that you're getting certain pain points and you're not staying in the status quo. You're looking at that pain point of saying it's a time for a shift, and you're being aware of that, and you're actually using your antidote without you even knowing it. So that's why you can have repeatable success over and over again once you understand your antidote and your sabotage trait. And I commend you for what a great shift you've done, and you're doing a fantastic job.
So in that process of growing my social media business, I hired people to do a lot of different things, Dr. Philip, but I saw it took up a lot of my time. And these people were not the right people because they were far not as talented as I was. And I did that. And then another shift came, Dr. Philip, that was out of my control. My wife decided to go ahead and stay home and no longer work. And I had to make the shift of cutting my staff after a specific amount of time, looking at cash flow and all that. That's a challenge as well. You know, once you have to do that, even though that's not the best decision for the business, but it was the best decision for the family.
And that's what you have to look at. And that's actually step two of the blueprint is what is it, how is it affecting you and the people around you? And unfortunately, a lot of times business owners overly give and they don't focus on what's happening with their family, whatever, and they're focusing on so much of the client. You have to find that balance, and you have to fall back within yourself. And then once you find that balance, then that's when things start to shift more in your favor.
So then I evaluated, a lot of it was my brand and focusing on my brand. So I decided at one point I had to let some of these people go because of cash flow issues and different things and focus more attention. But what I found was waiting on referrals and not having a sales rep anymore. I got hung up on specific things, network marketing again, but then it got me the ability to go out and talk to people again, Dr. Philip, which was fantastic. I got the opportunity to go out and talk to people. That was cool, too.
Yeah, and it frees you up so that you can do what you want to do. But you have to make sure it depends on your sabotaging trait. If you're the sabotaging trait person that doesn't express themselves well and doesn't like to connect as much, you're kind of inward bound. You have to take another 10 to 15% and to go out and express to people. And you have to realize you can't do this on your own. You have to have a team around you, but you also have to just ask. When people don't, they don't ask for help. They think they have to do this on their own. They don't. Ask people, and they'll be happy to help you.
So the last step in this process is, again, I found out that I'm a great salesperson, and I didn't think I was before, and I am because I always thought, hey, someone else needs to handle this. I close. Now I found out I'm good at networking, as you knew from talking to me during this interview, and then going to this process, and I found a system, and it works, and this is the first time ever I have unlimited leads and the opportunity to grow. And it's all a process. But what I learned in this whole process, because we are coming close to running out of time, is that you constantly evaluate, but you cannot stay in a business that constantly loses a client, gains a client, lose a couple, gains a couple clients. You're never going to grow, and you need to figure out a way to scale it. And when you find that out, you have to put, this is a growth phase, and you better go full-fledged, right, Dr. Philip? Full-fledged at that point once you figure that out.
Exactly. And you just got to make sure that you're on target and there's not people, things around you that are trying to offset that because of their own fears. Don't allow people to project their own fears upon you. They don't know what you're going through. You know what's best for you, and you have to have enough trust in yourself to make that decision and stick with it.
All right, best place we can find information on you, Dr. Philip, purchase your book and learn more about you. So we'll probably have part two down the line of this growth phase because you provide such great information. People need to take your course. They need to understand. This is a straight-out fact. Dr. Philip understands specifically a business as a business coach, a business advisor, and could take a business from beginning to end. I'll tell you that right now. I do the same thing, but he does it in a way of his experience, his ability that he understands a lot of different things, and he knows the things when it comes to an entrepreneur expanding, not just he wants to make a business, not just one person. He wants to teach you between 10 to 20 people, the 30 people, to scale it to whatever level you need to scale it, but then also take the mind and understand where the mind suffers. So best place we can find info.
You can go to sabotagequiz.com. That's sabotagequiz.com. You can click on the personal solutions button. It'll take you to the quiz. You'll find out your antidote, your sabotaging trait antidote, and they can also buy the book, too. That will give them a lot of great information, especially Chapter 17. That'll help them increase their closing rates by following the blueprint.
All right. Great talking to you. We'll definitely stay in touch, Dr. Philip, and thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for inviting me, Neil. You have a great one.
All right. You're listening to Neil Haley's show, and we'll be back in just a moment.